You know the feeling. You're just going about your day, maybe standing in line at a busy coffee shop, totally preoccupied, and your phone buzzes.
Yeah, it's that sudden jolt.
Right. You glance down at the screen, and it's a text message from your bank. It says, you know, security alert, new device login detected.
Right.
And just like that, the background noise completely fades away, and your stomach just drops.
It's an incredibly visceral reaction. I mean, we are literally hardwired to protect our resources.
Oh, absolutely.
So when an alert threatens your money, your livelihood, your brain just it immediately bypasses logic and goes straight into fight or flight mode.
It is pure unadulterated panic. And as we're going to find out today, that panic is, well, it's the key that unlocks the door to your entire financial life.
It really is.
We're doing a deep dive today into a very revealing financial crime report. It exposes the modern anatomy of smishing campaigns.
Yeah.
And smishing, for anyone lucky enough not to know, is SMS phishing. So phishing attacks conducted through text messaging. Our mission today is to look at how a simple, everyday text message is actually just the tip of a massive, heavily automated financial fraud iceberg. We're going to arm you with the knowledge to see the invisible machinery operating behind these scams. So, okay, let's unpack this. When your phone buzzes with a security alert, who is really on the other end?
Well, the answer to that question is far more corporate and, organized than most people realize.
Right.
But before we get to the invisible machinery, we really have to look at the front door. The report specifically highlights warnings sent to Santander and NatWest customers back in 2023.
Ah, yeah, the new device texts.
Exactly. Victims received texts claiming a transaction had been detected from a new, unrecognized device. To stop the supposed fraud, the text instructed them to click a link to verify the activity immediately.
And the most insidious part about this is where the text actually shows up. I mean, you look at your phone and you think, well, this has to be real. It's literally sitting in the exact same message thread as my previous legitimate bank statements and fraud alerts.
Yeah, right in the same folder.
How on earth does a scammer get their fake text into my real secure banking thread?
It comes down to a structural flaw in how our phones categorize text messages. Criminals abuse this feature called an alphanumeric sender ID.
Okay.
When a legitimate bank sends you a text, it usually doesn't come from a standard, 10-digit phone number. It comes from a text string like Santander or NatWest.
Right. It just says the name at the top.
Yeah. And the underlying SMS protocol, which was built decades ago, it relies almost entirely on trust.
Wow.
So a scammer can use an online messaging gateway to manually type in that exact same text string as their sender name.
Wait, so my phone's operating system just looks at the incoming text, reads the label, and says, oh, I already have a folder for this brand, and just drops the scam message right in with the real ones.
That is exactly the mechanism at work, yeah. Your phone is basically just matching text strings. It is not authenticating the underlying server that actually sent the message.
Oh man. It's like a burglar getting into your house by renting a police uniform from a costume shop, knocking on your front door and telling you your house is about to be robbed. You hand over your keys, not because you're careless, but because you inherently trust the uniform and the context of the situation.
The context of trust is the entire weapon here. The presence of a recognized brand or conversation history is no longer proof of authenticity.
Right.
Once the criminal has successfully hijacked that context, you are infinitely more likely to interact with the message.
And here is where the mechanics of the scam start to get truly terrifying. Because clicking that link in the text doesn't just take you to some like static dead-end web page where you drop in your password and the scammers come along to harvest it later.
Not anymore, no. Clicking that link initiates a live two-way connection with the
A
attackers.
live connection.
Yes. The report details a process called a reverse proxy attack, or what cybersecurity experts call an adversary in the middle.
Okay, how does that work?
When you click the link, you are directed to a server controlled by the criminals. This server perfectly reproduces the visual interface of your real bank.
So it looks identical.
Identical. It pulls the actual images, fonts, layouts from the genuine bank site in real time.
So I am looking at a mirror image of my bank, and on a tiny mobile phone screen, I am probably not scrutinizing the web address to notice that there's, I don't know, an extra hyphen or a weird subdomain hiding in the URL.
Exactly. You're panicked.
Right. So I type in my username and password, thinking I am logging in to cancel this rogue new device.
Oh.
What is the proxy server doing at that exact moment?
The fake site intercepts your username and password the second you type them. simultaneously an automated script or sometimes even a human operator sitting at a keyboard thousands of miles away. They take your credentials and inject them into the real banking website.
Hold on. If they're tapping my password into the real bank site, they're going to hit the two-factor authentication wall, right? They don't have my phone, so how do they bypass that security measure?
By using you.
What do you mean?
Because the scammer is trying to log in from a device the bank does not recognize, the legitimate bank does exactly what it is programmed to do. It generates a one-time passcode, an OTP, and sends it to your actual phone via a real text message.
So my phone buzzes again. And this time, it is a 100% genuine code sent directly from my real bank.
Yes. But the fake proxy website you are staring at anticipates this. It instantly updates its screen to say, please enter the security code we just sent you to cancel the suspicious activity.
Oh, wow.
You type that real code into the fake site. The fraudster grabs it, pastes it into the genuine site, and they have successfully bypassed the two-factor authentication.
That is absolutely brutal. You think you are canceling a fraudulent action, but you're actually handing them the keys to authorize their login.
Yeah. And once they're inside, they can do incredible damage. They can create a new payee, initiate a wire transfer, or provision your debit card to the fraudster's digital wallet like Apple Pay or Google Pay.
Which allows them to spend your money anywhere in the world.
Exactly.
This brings us to a massive distinction in the financial crime world that the report emphasizes heavily. We are dealing with two very different beasts here, unauthorized fraud and authorized push payment fraud, which is abbreviated as APP fraud.
Right. And understanding that distinction is crucial to grasping the modern landscape. Unauthorized fraud is the traditional model. A criminal steals your credit card number or hacks your account and buys something without your knowledge.
Right. You never approve the transaction.
Exactly. But authorized push payment fraud, APP fraud, is fundamentally different. In this scenario, you, the customer, are the one technically instructing the bank to send the money. Or you're handing over the real-time codes that authorize the action.
Even though I'm being tricked.
Yes, you are doing it because you have been completely deceived, but the system registers it as an authorized command from the account holder.
And the numbers on this shift are staggering. Looking at the UK finance stats for 2025, criminals stole a total of £1.28 billion through payment fraud. But the wild part is that unauthorized losses, the traditional hacking and card theft, actually declined.
Right.
Meanwhile, APP losses, where people are manipulated into authorizing the action themselves, rose dramatically to £576.4 million.
It's a huge shift.
But wait, I have to step in and push back on the technology here. We hear constantly about how advanced banking security is. If the technology is so robust, why does it fail so spectacularly in these situations? I mean, isn't the system fundamentally broken if a password and a text code only prove that some digits were typed in, but failed to prove that the customer actually understood what they were approving?
What's fascinating here is that you've just articulated the exact reason why the global fraud landscape evolved.
Really?
Yeah. Criminal syndicates realized a few years ago that breaking into a major bank's mainframe is incredibly difficult, is highly expensive, and carries a massive risk of getting caught by authorities. So they stopped trying to hack the computer systems, and they started hacking human psychology.
It is the path of least resistance.
Entirely. From a purely technical standpoint, the authentication isn't broken. It successfully verifies that the correct code was supplied.
But authentication cannot prove state of mind. It cannot detect that you are sweating in a coffee shop, terrified that your life savings are vanishing.
So they bypass billions of dollars in elite cybersecurity infrastructure just by making us panic. That's wild. But let's look at a different scenario. What if the victim gets that initial text message? They panic, but they are, you know, wary of clicking links, or they simply aren't tech savvy enough to navigate a mobile browser.
The criminal networks have a highly polished, incredibly convincing backup plan ready to deploy. Very often, these smishing texts do not even include a web link.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they simply state that fraud has been detected and provide a phone number for the victim to call immediately to secure their account.
And if I call that number, I assume I'm not getting some amateur sitting in a garage with a voice scrambler.
Definitely not. You are connecting to a fully operational, professionalized, illicit call center. The person answering the phone adopts the precise tone and language of a bank fraud department. They are incredibly calm and reassuring. They provide fake employee ID numbers and case references. They will even ask you standard security questions like your mother's maiden name or the first line of your address, just to make the interaction feel procedural, bureaucratic, and legitimate.
So they are establishing authority by mirroring the exact friction we expect from a real bank.
Exactly.
But how does that phone call transition into them actually stealing the money?
Well, once they have established that authority and lowered your defenses, they introduce the pivot.
The pivot.
Yes. They inform you that several fraudulent payments are currently pending and that your existing account is fundamentally compromised. To protect your life savings, they instruct you to immediately move all your funds to a newly generated safe account that they have supposedly set up in your name.
Which I think we need to establish as an ironclad rule right now.
Yeah.
A legitimate bank will absolutely never do this.
Under no circumstances. No legitimate financial institution will ever instruct a customer to transfer their own funds to a secret safe account to avoid fraud. But when you are in a manufactured state of panic, critical thinking vanishes. And to make the illusion airtight, the scammers employ caller ID spoofing.
How does that actually work? Because if my phone screen says fraud department, it is incredibly hard not to believe it.
It works similarly to the text message flaw, but exploits the architecture of the telecom networks. Caller ID was designed decades ago on a system based entirely on trust.
Again with the trust.
Yeah. When a call is placed through modern voice over IP networks, the caller can manually fill in a data field specifying what number should display on the recipient's screen. Think of it like mailing a physical letter. You can write absolutely anything you want in the return address corner of the envelope, and the postal service will still deliver it.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the source material makes it clear that we're not looking at a single operation here. This isn't just one guy in a hoodie sitting in a basement writing code, building a fake website, answering the phone, and moving the money all by himself.
Not at all. The report refers to this ecosystem as modular criminal services. The digital underworld operates very much like a modern corporate supply chain. There are specialized groups that do nothing but code and host the fake proxy websites.
Just focusing on that one piece.
Right. And they sell these phishing kits as a subscription service.
Well, software as a service, but for felonies.
Precisely. Then there are specialized groups that purchase the stolen credentials. And let's say they don't use those credentials to steal money directly today. They use a technique called credential stuffing.
Wait, credential stuffing, that is when they take a password stolen from, say, a random shoe store or website, and use automated software to blast that same password across thousands of banking and email login pages to see what unlocks.
Right. That is it exactly. Okay. Because human beings reuse passwords constantly, a breach in one low security platform creates a master key to their high security accounts.
Makes sense.
But to return to the supply chain, if the operation requires social engineering over the phone, they outsource that to a separate group that specializes entirely in running fraudulent call centers.
So one group builds the trap, another group collects the data, and a third group executes the psychological manipulation.
Exactly.
But if this is a highly organized modular supply chain, how do they extract the physical cash at the end of the line without leaving a massive digital paper trail? And more importantly, who is actually footing the bill for that 1.28 billion pounds?
Well, the extraction phase is reliant on what is called a mule account. The mule account is basically the getaway car of the entire operation.
Okay, I love the getaway car analogy. But how does a digital bank account function like a getaway car?
When you are manipulated into transferring your funds to that safe account, the money has to land somewhere in the real financial system. That landing pad is the mule account. It might belong to a complicit individual who is paid a fee to move the money, or a legitimate business that has been compromised. But increasingly, the getaway car is driven by a synthetic identity.
A synthetic identity.
Right.
That sounds like something out of a sci-fi movie. How do you synthesize a person?
It is a chillingly methodical process. Criminals combine real, stolen data like a child's valid national insurance or social security number with fabricated information like a fake name and address.
Oh, wow.
They use this Frankenstein identity to apply for small credit accounts, paying them off over months or years to build a pristine credit history. Once the identity looks unimpeachable to a bank's automated screening tools, they open checking accounts.
So the bank system sees a stellar credit score and a seemingly real person, and just rolls out the red carpet.
Yeah. And the second your stolen money hits that synthetic mule account, it is moved onward with incredible velocity. It is fractured and sent to dozens of other accounts, withdrawn as physical cash at ATMs, or immediately converted into untraceable cryptocurrency.
Because in the banking world, speed is a weapon. The faster they move it, the harder it is for your real bank to issue a recall on the wire transfer.
Speed creates distance, which means the receiving institution, the bank hosting the mule account, is arguably just as responsible for stopping the crime as the bank that sent the money.
Which brings us to a monumental shift in the regulatory landscape. On October 7th, 2024, a new rule went into effect in the UK. Eligible victims of APP scams made through Faster Payments and Team Peace, which are the real-time money transfer systems that allow funds to move instantly, now receive mandatory reimbursement up to £85,000.
This represents a massive consumer safeguard. Historically, if you authorized the payment, the bank would often argue it was your fault and you bore the loss.
Right.
Now, if you are manipulated into sending your money up to £85,000, the financial institutions are required to make you whole.
So what does this all mean? I mean, the victim is protected, which is fantastic, but the report points out a massive glaring dilemma with this rule. Reimbursing the victim is like the bank buying you a brand new television after your house was robbed, but doing absolutely nothing to impound the getaway cars speeding away from the scene.
That's a great way to put it.
The thieves are still getting rich.
That is the moral hazard of the current system. The financial institutions balance their ledgers by reimbursing the victim, but the criminal network successfully extracted the real funds. The fraud economy continues to be wildly profitable.
Yeah.
The money didn't vanish. It simply transferred from the legitimate banking sector into the pockets of global organized crime, funding human trafficking, drug cartels, and further cyber terrorism.
It is a terrifying thought. So, since just throwing reimbursement money at the problem does not actually stop the criminals, how do we plug the hole? How do you, the individual listening right now, and the global financial institutions actually fight back? Let's talk defense.
For personal defense, the absolute bedrock control is independent navigation. If you receive an unexpected message regarding your finances, you must never click the embedded link, never call the provided number, and never scan a QR code.
Even if the text is sitting comfortably in the exact same thread as your normal everyday bank updates?
Especially then. You must close the message. Open your official banking app directly from your phone's home screen. Type the known website address manually into your browser, or flip over your physical debit card and call the number printed on the back. For listeners in the UK, there is also an initiative where you can dial 159, which acts as a secure direct hotline to participating major banks.
And what should we do with the actual scam text to help the ecosystem?
You can forward suspicious text messages to 7726. If you look at a phone keypad, those numbers spell out SPAM. Forwarding those messages allows telecom providers to analyze the malicious links and block them at the network level.
That's super practical.
Additionally, you must fundamentally change how you interact with one-time passcodes.
You mean not just frantically looking for the six digits to copy and paste?
Exactly. You must read the contextual text surrounding the code. The message will specify the action code to add a new payee or code to authorize £500. If that text does not correspond exactly to what you believe you are doing, the system is trying to warn you that you are being manipulated.
I hear all of this. And logically, sitting here in a calm environment makes total sense. But I am going to push back again.
Sure.
If I am in that coffee shop, panicked about losing my life savings, my heart is racing, I am definitely not going to remember to carefully check if the subdomain has a hyphen in it. And I am probably going to treat a pop-up security warning the exact same way I treat the iTunes terms and conditions. I am just going to blindly scroll to the bottom and click accept so I can get on with my life and pay my friends for pizza. Shouldn't the banks and the online platforms be connecting these dots before the burden falls on me?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you are entirely correct to push back. The report stresses that while consumer education is vital, we cannot place the entire burden of defense on the psychology of a panicked individual. The institutions have to step up and implement what is known as multi-indicator behavioral analytics.
How does that actually work behind the scenes?
A single data point is rarely enough to prove fraud. A customer logging in from a new device or resetting a password or creating a new payee, any of those actions in isolation could be perfectly legitimate.
Sure.
But behavioral analytics looks for the combination and the velocity of those actions.
So they're connecting the dots in real time.
Correct. If the bank's back end sees a new device enrollment, immediately followed by a password reset, immediately followed by the creation of a brand new payee, and then an attempt to transfer a large sum of money, that sequence is a massive red flag.
And they can even track how we physically interact with our devices.
Right. Yes. Advanced systems analyze typing cadence, the angle you are holding your phone based on the gyroscope, or unusual hesitation with a mouse. Are you copying and pasting data in a way that suggests you are reading instructions from a scammer's text? Are you staying on a live phone call while trying to authorize a transfer? The bank system can detect these anomalies and freeze the transaction, forcing a hard pause to break the psychological spell.
And it isn't just the banks that need to adapt. The telecom networks are the highways these scammers are using to reach us in the first place.
Right. Historically, telecoms operated purely as neutral pipes, delivering whatever data was sent through them. But the 2025 data showed that while the majority of APP fraud originates online, the cases that originate through telecommunications, the smishing texts and spoofed phone calls, result in a disproportionately large share of the actual financial losses.
Which is why the UK's communications regulator, Ofcom, is rolling out major changes in 2026.
Yes. The new Ofcom regulations will compel mobile providers to actively collect intelligence and intervene. They will be required to detect and disrupt scam messages and spoofed calls at the network level before they ever reach a consumer's device.
So the goal is to completely break down the institutional silos. Banks, payment firms, telecom networks, social media platforms, and law enforcement all hold different puzzle pieces of this attack chain. If they share that data in real time, they can identify the fake proxy sites, block the spoof sender IDs, and freeze the synthetic mule accounts before the money successfully leaves the country.
Because a suspicious text message is never just an isolated attempt to steal a password. It is the entry point into a highly coordinated global fraud and money laundering syndicate.
So, as we wrap up this deep dive, let's look back at where we started. That single anxiety-inducing new device text, buzzing in your pocket while you wait for your coffee. It is not just a glitch. And it is not just a random spammer seeing what sticks. It is the front door to a sophisticated real-time machine. It involves cloned websites, live proxy interceptions, professional call centers establishing fake authority, and vast networks of synthetic mule accounts ready to wash your money away in a matter of seconds.
It is an entire illicit economy built fundamentally on manipulating human trust and manufacturing panic.
We have talked today about how criminals realized that bypassing multi-billion-dollar computer security was too hard, so they shifted to manipulating our psychology. But as we look toward the future, I want to leave you with a thought to mull over. If a simple spoofed text message or a stranger's voice on a phone call is enough to bypass our critical thinking today, what happens tomorrow? With the rapid explosion of AI voice cloning technology, what happens when the phone rings and the voice on the other end isn't a fake bank employee, but sounds exactly indistinguishably like your spouse or your child, frantically telling you they are in trouble and need you to wire money right this second? If we are struggling to patch the vulnerabilities in human trust right now, how do we prepare for a world where we can't even trust the sound of our own loved ones' voices? Next time your phone buzzes, take a breath, do not click the link, and always verify exactly who is knocking on the front door of your financial life.